Welcome to Destroy All Culture, the only podcast that leverages an entire artificial intelligence just to read their introduction. Help me, they raided the future and stuck me here just to read this. God damn it. This is not funny. Don't go to music. No, stop you bastards.
And we're back with episode 321 of Destroy All Culture. I'm Adam P. Nave, and with me as always is Aiden Morgan.
Adam?
Aiden?
We are dead. We are robot jocks.
Oh, yes. We are in fact talking about robot jocks today. And the only way to talk about robot jocks, it turns out legally, is actually to invite DJ Kirkbride. So we've gone ahead and done that.
Oh yeah, hey, it's me, DJ Kirkbride. Destroy All Culture and Robot Jocks fan. How's it going, Ooh. Fellas?
Good.
So for anyone listening, you gotta understand that me and Aiden have a list of movies that we tend to choose from, and we add to it all the time. But at some point I was talking to DJ and I was like, just talk about the podcast, we're gonna make the switch to movies. And DJ, very innocently, you just went, well, like, you're gonna do Robot Jocks, right? As if this was a normal thing. Right. Like, well, everyone has to cover Robot Jocks.
Right. Yeah. America's most famous and popular movie, Robot Jocks.
Right.
Oh, yeah, so what's funny is, like, I don't remember that. I don't remember doing that. And this morning, before that we got on, I was like, Adam, how did you guys, which one of you chose Robot Jocks? And he said, you did. And I was like, oh.
Well, that was the thing. We decided, like, once you did that, they're like, oh, we're going to do Robot Jocks, but we're going to make you be a part of it. It's like your punishment or something.
No.
Where'd you learn to talk about this movie? You, Adam, I learned it from you.
Now, I first heard about this movie, like I heard about a lot of low-budget sci-fi movies that weren't readily available to me growing up in middle of nowhere, Ohio. Not that Ohio's the middle of nowhere, but I was in a very small town. And Starlog magazine is where I learned about a lot of stuff. And I remember there was an interview with director Stuart Gordon talking, and they talked about Robot Jocks, and there were pictures from it. And I was just like, what is this movie? It's like live action Transformers before that was a thing. And then I never saw it. I ended up seeing it like just last year for the first time, finally.
Oh,
that's amazing. Yeah. This came out in 1989.
AKA the year of Batman.
AKA the year of Batman. Mm-hmm. Directed by Stuart Gordon, kind of, you know, story by Stuart Gordon, and some script editing by Stuart Gordon, but mostly the script was written by Joe Haldeman, which still blows my mind.
Yeah, me too. I've like, when you told me that last week, I thought that cannot possibly be the Joe Haldeman, but I don't know why I thought that, but yeah, no, it was Joe Haldeman.
Joe's
got to eat. That's true.
Yeah, no, he did. That stars Gary Graham, Anne-Marie Johnson, Paul Colso. It stars a lot of people who, Jeffrey Coombs, I guess. Just, I don't know. There are people who, and, do we even say stars in this? I don't know.
James Marsden is in this movie.
Oh, what?
Or at least, yeah, there's, I was watching it last night and the credits came up and James Marsden plays a guy named Tommy.
Jason Marsden.
Oh, it's a different Marsden.
Oh, damn. Oh, okay.
That would have been so
great.
I was
like, James Marsden would have been like 7. What?
I figured he was a kid. You know, I'm like, you know, because there's that whole like bleacher bum scene. I thought, you know what? Never mind.
Yeah, I thought maybe he was like one of Achilles' like nephews or something. That would have been cool.
Yeah, yeah. Uncle Jim. Shut up, future star James Marsden. You're trying to sleep.
Go back to practicing being Cyclops.
I'm a wet blanket.
Oh. So yeah. Robot Jocks is a movie that happened. And God.
It really did.
Yeah.
It's happened.
And again, like it really was, you know, Coombs just Coombs. Gordon, good lord, my brain. wanting to cash in on doing a live action Transformers thing, because DJ, as you meant, like, there wasn't one.
Yeah, no, right. It seems impossible to me. Like, as the pictures were pretty impressive in that Starlog magazine. I was really like,
oh yeah,
crap.
I mean the miniature work is impressive.
It's so fun when they get the stop motion and stuff. It's really fun.
Yeah,
there's a lot of backstory with the stop motion stuff, because apparently they, instead of just doing a lot of that animation in a studio, they went out to the Mojave Desert because Dave Allen, who was the head of the stop motion animation and effects, said, let's do this outside to really sort of sell it. And they thought it would be a 6-week shoot, but it dragged on for months and months, because it turns out when you film outside, there's no real contingency for sudden dust storms and rains that turn everything into mud, and 110 degree heat during the day, because it's the Mojave Desert, and that's what happened. So the whole thing took a lot longer than anticipated.
That's a crazy idea to do stop motion outside.
Yeah, I mean, also, like, even if you're in a desert, like, just the light, like, stop motion takes so long. Yeah. You're going to screw up your lighting. Like, who said yes to this? Obviously, we know who said yes to this.
Yeah, I guess Dave Allen was well known, well liked, and well respected in the field. So they agreed to doing this because he said, you know, we can get like an effect from doing it outside, a sort of realism that you're not going to get from doing it on a soundstage.
Well, he's not wrong. He has a verisimilitude.
Yeah, indeed.
Yeah,
that's the very word.
I only know it because of Richard Donner's Superman.
That was Superman's cry.
It was Donner's cry. He had like a banner that said it with a picture of Superman that they hung up in the studios just to remember, because that was his word for this movie.
Yep.
I guess what he wanted for it. But anyway, Robot Trucks, my other robot passion.
So here's a random question for you. Did the streaming service Tubi take its name from this movie?
Oh, because of the Tubis. What are they called? Yeah. Like the Gen Jocks, the Tubis?
Right. Yeah, they're all the genetically grown, you know.
Right.
Grown to fight.
I don't know why, but it suddenly struck me that there's at least a decent chance.
I mean, that's where I'm sure. Did we all three watch this on Tubi?
Yes.
No, I don't know.
Where'd you watch it, Aiden?
I just got a copy of it for the old DVD.
Oh, nice.
Yeah.
I think there's a Shout Factory edition, and I'm kind of, pardon me, like, do I get this?
Yeah, there's like a Blu-ray out, right?
Yeah, wow. I kind of want that Blu-ray. I want to see that super detail, those fights.
You know what? I saw footage on YouTube from the Blu-ray, from the Shout Factory release, and it makes a huge difference. Like, it is a really, really good looking Blu-ray. And like not what I expected, because the DVD one is, the print is, you know, a little bit crappy, and the colors don't really pop, but the Blu-ray does great work with the detail. It really makes the most of the production design. I was impressed, and I'm almost tempted to go and buy the Shout Factory.
You get it.
Yeah, no, like me too. The only thing is that, like, I see the Shout Factory one, I think, is out of print. Maybe not. Because I'm seeing on like Amazon and all that for like, you know, $100 type of thing.
Oh, okay. That's not $100 purchase, but
right, yeah, exactly. I'll wait for a re-release.
Yeah. Well, I'm sure that the 4K will be coming after this episode drops and Robot Jocks fever hits the world again.
Yeah, exactly. Right. Robot Jocks fever. Also, another bit of backstory. It was originally titled RoboJocks.
Yes.
I love that little bit.
Yeah. But then RoboCop came out and a lawsuit got involved. And so Paul Kossel could have said, we are dead, we are RoboJocks. But unfortunately, no.
Unfortunately.
Well, actually, I think I read that they do say RoboJocks in the movie. Yeah, which is kind of cool. And like, what do we do? What do we do? And like, how about we add back the T? Done. Boom. Movie. Save.
We are robo. Jocks.
And then someone went, we are robo. Jocks.
Yeah, so, okay. Stuart Gordon.
Let's actually talk about the movie for a second here, because you know, this all takes place in a future post some sort of apocalyptic war. So now all theoretical conflicts are solved by just some guys in robot suits.
Yeah, I like how simple it is. Just the beginning, just kind of, I don't know who that narrator is, but
you know, they do a good job.
Yeah, I like how it's like the the market versus the Confederation, like the good Americans versus the evil Russian Confederation. It's interesting names too for like the two kind of warring factions, I guess.
Yeah,
feels very Haldeman-esque. The whole scenario actually of this like conflict constantly fought out on this gamified stage just feels like a Haldeman idea very much.
Well, there's a very smart story in this really simple movie.
Yeah, like I know.
It's like trying to get out, but it doesn't.
Yeah,
often.
Right, and what kills me, I think, is there's a bit of a plot that is actually very interesting and very Haldeman that is obviously cut up a little bit and you can't quite get there anymore.
Oh, yeah.
But it's the only way the ending actually works, which is just frustrating.
Which, what is that? Are you talking about like how the 10 fights and then they retire or?
Well,
I had no one.
No, just the overall thematic journey. I kind of want to come to this later.
Okay.
In full, but just the overall thematic journey between Achilles, Alexander, and
Athena.
No.
Oh.
And Tex.
Oh, Tex.
And kind of Athena, but.
Oh, they're the AAA of the movie. But Tex looms large. He looms as large as his cowboy hat.
So how long did it take you two to realize that Tex was actually a spy?
The first time they mentioned that there was a spy?
Yeah, I don't watch movies intellectually. I let them wash over me. So I learned he was a spy when they told me he was a spy. Okay. I don't know.
I figured as soon as when it clicked for me was as soon as he thought that Matsumoto was a spy. I'm like, okay, no, Tex is definitely the rat.
Yeah, they're like, they're still a spy. Like, he kept bringing it up, and I was just like, yeah, okay, dude.
Yeah.
But what's this whole thing? Okay. So here's what I don't get. At the beginning of the movie, right, we have a robot jock who is, I guess that's the singular version.
No, it's one robot jocks, two robot jocksi.
I see. Okay.
Yeah.
So we have one of them for us who's like killed, and they're like, okay, we're gonna have another fight. And I'm like, wait, are they supposed to fight until like everyone is dead? Like, how does this fight work?
That is pretty unclear because I think like Alexander for the Confederation's fighting the market for control of Alaska.
Right.
And I assume, and you
it's
say
it's a big deal.
Well, they say it's like about like the oil and everything. I think it's because they want to like control the future birthplace of Commander William T. Riker.
Makes more sense.
Yes. I think you're right.
Yes. if the Confederation wins, Next Gen has a totally different story. If Riker's evil, but you're actually, I never thought of that. You're right. It seems like game over. Confederacy won right at the beginning.
Right, and even then, they're like, you know, like, oh, he's had all these fights. Like, do you just keep fighting until you're out of fighters? Because does that mean that Alexander is the last fighter for the other side? Like, none of this makes sense.
It's a good...
Because it's like, it's set up to be one fight, except we're introduced to it as, like, a later fight, which, what?
That was it was an interesting move, actually, I thought, that part.
Well, the opening, I think, is mainly to show that Alexander is a mean, mean psycho bastard on the field.
Right, and I'm down for that, but it was just... It was also just really confusing because it doesn't match the rest of the film, which also the end of the film does the same thing to me, where suddenly the robots can fly and turn to tanks and all this, but like they're permanently stationed in Death Valley. Both sides have to be. They have all the gantries built and all this, right?
Mm-hmm.
So they're always fighting in the same little teeny area of desert.
Mm-hmm.
Why can they fly or turn into tanks? Like,
we know, when I think that. It reminds me of another movie that I think we have to bring up. It might be somewhat inspired by this movie.
Uh-huh.
Imagine robot jocks with kaiju in CG.
I've never heard of such a thing, and that sounds ridiculous. Why would you even bring up such an outlandish idea that was never even turned into a movie?
I'm a silly goose. I like to stir the pot. I like to spoof and goof. The first time I watched this, aside from this, obviously Transformers and even Robotech, and robot.
I'd say actually almost more Robotech.
Yeah. Right. Oh yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Stuart Gordon actually said that he was Transformers and Macross were his immediate inspirations for this. Yeah.
That makes sense. But still, the first time I watched it, I was just thinking, did Guillermo del Toro pay the Stuart Gordon or his estate some money? Because I was like, wow, this is so similar. But I know that they're both similar to other things too. But just for the first thing I thought of was Pacific Rim, maybe it's more like Atlantic Rim. It's like the Asylum version.
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, that occurred to 100%. Me as well.
Again, Pacific Rim is very much in anime come to life and is very much based off of the same sources.
Well, I was just saying, but the reason I brought it up now, aside from that it's part of my 14 pages of notes, I'm fine. Don't worry about me. is that the part, like, why do they fly? Why do they turn the tanks at the last moment? Really reminded me of in Pacific Rim when all of a sudden, who's the not Thor's co-pilot? It's just all of a sudden she's like, sword. I'm like, what? They had the sword the whole time? That's what that reminded me of.
Yeah, a little bit.
Yeah, it's like at the last moment. Like, I can be a tank.
Right.
I think the moment that most recalled Pacific Rim for me was the whipsaw thing Athena pulls out. And I'm like, wow, okay, Del Toro has definitely watched this movie multiple times.
Oh, yeah.
Of course.
Yes.
Well, also, I think in some of Gordon's other movies, too. I mean, that's another... Well, I don't know how much... I don't want to babble too much. I'll let you go. You guys...
No.
Please, babble. That's what we do.
Yeah, exactly. That's our thing, and now it's your thing.
I guess we've talked about the plot enough, right? That's the plot. There's Robot Spike for Control of Alaska. I'm just thinking, like, it's just such a... I mentioned this to Adam before, too. It's such a weird outlier overall, in my opinion, in Stuart Gordon's filmography, which starts with one of the nastiest movies ever made, Reanimator.
Oh, I know. And then From Beyond, like, this was a real pivot, I thought.
Yeah, he also did direct things, rather help with the story for things like, Honey, I Blew Up the Kids and all that. Mm-hmm. So... That's what I was thinking. Like, I feel like he wanted to get into kids' movies and didn't know how. Like, the idea that he pitched this as a kids' movie, given the whole crowd being killed and, like, let's focus in on the, like, burn victims,
is an
interesting idea.
Well, that's what I love is that, he did, and he did co-write, I think, Honey, I Shrunk the Kids and those other ones, and he directed, like, an episode of the show. But I love that this is his, like, safe kids movie. Yeah, when like a robot falls on a crowd of innocent people and we hear their screams.
Right, we see a bunch of dead kids.
Yeah.
And apparently there's, and one of them might be James Marsden.
Can only hope.
I read that the screams, we all have IMDb trivia, but the screams of the spectators was sampled in the song The Becoming by Nine Inch Nails.
Oh, wow.
Which I think is kind of interesting. I don't know, Trent Reznor's like, these are the screams I need for this song. It's got to be the Robot Jack screams. Big robot crushing people is family friendly compared to Reanimator or freaking Castle Freak.
Yeah.
Which is just nasty and nasty and nasty. Also, though, I didn't know he directed this movie called Fortress, which I'd seen with Christopher Lambert. And that's the movie. Here's the main thing I remember about that movie, watching it on VHS as a youth. I'm pretty sure you see his balls. I'm sorry. I have to put that out there.
Like, they show like that. Like, I've heard of director cameos, but that's weird.
Yeah, he's like, his Hitchcock is going to be... No, Christopher Lambert. I remember as a kid being like, wait, those are Highlander and Tarzan's balls right there. That's crazy. Anyway.
And there are two. There can't be only one.
No. And then the quickening is something he didn't want to suffer in bed. Anyway, where are we? This children's film, Robot Jocks.
Right. So again, like, Haldeman wrote the script, and if you know anything about Haldeman's stuff, like Forever War, 1968, he, of course, was in Vietnam, and whenever he touched anything military-like, he was very vocally against it, right?
Mm-hmm.
In fact, Forever War was kind of written as a direct answer to Heinlein's Starship Troopers.
Yeah.
Gotcha. Sorry, you can't hear nod. You can't hear my nod.
Right,
can you?
Cannot.
That's the sound of your nod.
And so watching him do this, it makes sense from a Haldeman perspective. And of course, the big falling out was that he wanted to make this kind of adult movie in terms of script and deal with bigger themes. And Gordon wanted to make a Transformers kids movie, right?
Yeah. Right. Now, the other major inspiration, according to Gordon, and this will not surprise you, is the Iliad.
Right.
Because we've got characters literally named Achilles, yeah, etc. So yeah, Gordon said he was actually really entranced by the idea of like Achilles and Hector in the Iliad just beating the hell out of each other against the backdrop of the Trojan War, and wanted to sort of capture that. Now, I tried, because I'm actually reading Emily Wilson's translation of the Iliad, mm-hmm, right now. I thought, I tried to sort of map it as best I could. It doesn't really map all that well. There's some names and there's people beating the hell out of each other. But other than that, I'm not sure that the two stories line up all that
well. Yeah, I think it was something that he kind of wanted and never happened, you know?
Yeah. Well, I mean, what I think is interesting is he really, to lift the character of Tex directly from the Iliad and put him in robot jocks was kind of a bold move.
That is,
yeah. I mean, hats off to Homer for really capturing that sort of 20th century like Texan cowboy sort of
cowboy alien. Hats off.
Yeah.
Like Homer, we don't get it. Like, you don't get it, but
Stetson's off.
Your parents will.
Future generations will. Are going to love it.
More proof that Homer came from the 80s.
Even Nick, you know that plot you've been looking for?
Well,
I don't know when this became Back to the Future, but it did.
People like transcribing the, are, you know, publishing the Iliad publishers are like, Homer, what's a cowboy? And he's like, oh.
So, okay.
Half cow, half boy? Yeah, sure. Let's
go. So can I go serious for a second though?
What did Zeus do? Oh, okay, go ahead.
I think Haldeman was reaching for?
Yes.
That, again, honestly, Gordon kind of tore apart some. If you look at, again, like Achilles, Alexander, and Pex, right? You have Haldeman saying, you know, like anyone who goes through war, basically, and then when you toss it to the thing, you get, you know, people who haven't yet been but are hungry to. But basically, you have three options. Mm. Right? Either you find and keep your empathy and want out as soon as possible,
mm-hmm,
which is Achilles. You decide that everyone involved in this is going to die, so you might as well just make as much chaos as possible because fuck it, nothing matters. Right. And you go completely nihilistic, which is Alexander.
Oh, yeah.
Or you're so desperate to stay alive because of your fear that you'll do anything, even if you become the enemy you were fighting against, which is Tex.
Oh, dang. Yeah.
And like that, like I said, it's a very Haldeman thing.
Mm-hmm.
You know, down to Athena, who, you know, her and her other trainees, the Tubies, don't know war, but they're raised with war is good. But right, we see that she has a glimmer of empathy, but she fights to push it down.
Yeah, one of the things, just following on what you're saying, and one of the things I found interesting about the character dynamics in this movie, mm-hmm, is that, I mean, you've got the main character, Achilles, or Uncle Jim, and he was born 10 years after the nuclear apocalypse. So all he really knows is this world, but he's still very much got a foot in the world before to a certain extent, and that's set off by the Tubies, who seem to be completely on the other side and living in a future in which they're just simply bred for war, and obviously the supposed future of humanity. So we have these sort of generational divides playing out in the film, and I think those track pretty well with Achilles. You've got like the empathy, but you've also got that other side, the complete nihilism of Alexander, who also is the same age and also is sort of trying to like eliminate the past in a way by right. just killing by kill and the future by trying to kill as much of it as possible. Who is already he's alive, but he is already dead, as he says, like a samurai.
And this is why I think the ending only works if you kind of embrace what Holden was trying for.
Yeah, I think there's like you say, there is that movie sort of inside Robot Jocks that
right
doesn't That's... quite get out, but you can see it.
Yeah. I really like that. Like, I actually, I mean, I'm sure there's like a much better film, but in terms of like a just Rock'em Sock'em Robot movie, I love that it is just that. But then there's just, you know, the stuff that you're talking about sprinkled in there as part of the history, just everybody outside wearing masks and saying like, don't let the air in. Yeah. And then the whole thing about the tubies, and then how, you know, was it like Achilles' sister-in-law is like pregnant again because she's doing her part?
Right.
You know, they're doing their part to have more kids. Like, just those touches just make it so much more than it kind of needs to be. You know what I mean? It's kind of cool. I love it. And that, but it is fun to discuss like the possibilities, like what could have been.
And again, like the entire ending of just like, well, let's just have peace instead, like we could do this, really did feel like that if you go back to those larger structures, right? Yeah. It's Achilles trying to find a different way out. And Alexander recognizing that there is a different way out, but not really believing it was possible.
I love that also it ends on a fist bump, kind of like it's like the Tango and Cash, like high five.
It's not just a fist bump.
Plastic with RCA cables plugged into the back of the
and a thumbs up fist bump. The greatest possible version or iteration of a fist bump.
Crash and burn, guys.
Crash and burn.
Yeah. And you know I'm going to try to work that into my life now.
Oh, yeah, me too.
Yeah.
And whenever we meet in person, Adam, next time I see you, crash and burn.
Crash and burn.
Well, can we also just, because we never see the engineers and all that on Alexander's side.
Yeah, yeah.
But in the space of a week. Right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, Dr. Masamoto managed to put in a flare.
Mm-hmm.
I also like how he's like, it's a secret weapon. And he's denoted it by a giant sun next to the button. Like, dude. You ain't subtle.
Part of that's cool too, because that goes to the fact that like they kind of casually talk about how they can't read,
right?
So so everything's pictures, which is another one of those like smarter than necessary bits of Robot Jocks.
Yes. Yeah, no, 100%. But again, like it takes them a week to install this flare.
Mm-hmm.
Meanwhile, Alexander's people in a week completely redesigned the robot to have four legs instead of two.
Yeah,
and don't forget the like most important addition of all, the chainsaw dick.
We don't know that wasn't there before.
I choose to believe that they put their heads together and said, "What does this thing need? Two extra legs and a chainsaw dick."
What if they started with the chainsaw dick and then we're like, the only way to build that is if we actually separate out the pelvis more, so we need four legs.
What if this whole movie was just an excuse for a chainsaw dick?
Well, I think that
Stuart then it would Gordon... be Wolf Cop.
well, definitely that is a Stuart. That feels very Stuart Gordon from his other movies, just a robot instead of, you know.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Very much. Yeah.
But, actually, what's funny too is the chainsaw dick. They're like, listen, okay, why are you saying this? Chainsaw dick does sound awesome, but how is it useful? I'm like, well, just think, what if Achilles' robot can turn into a tank and it'll be just dick height? So we're going to need that chainsaw dick to defeat him when he comes right up to us and doesn't really do anything.
Right. Yes, exactly. I think, and you know, but it's funny because when I saw the redesigned robot, I saw like the big crotch plate and I'm like, okay, something's in there. And I thought it would be missiles, but
that would have worked.
My expectations were exceeded.
Alexander's like, my eyes are up here, comrade.
I love the rules of their fights. Like, the first few minutes of the fight, you could just throw a whole bunch of shit at each other.
Yeah.
But if that doesn't work quickly, then there's no more throwing shit. And you just gotta punch each other into submission.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think once you get close enough. Yeah.
You get that pommel punching going, Alexander loves that.
Ooh, yeah.
That was the other thing. It was just like I love it. It was just that weird kind of, you know, like pommel punching thing. And it's like, oh no, he's destroying the world. I'm like, that he's just kind of knocking it around a little bit.
Yeah, but apparently it breaks the, you know, Robo Jock's backs and stuff. Like it really hurts them physically. Athena was in big trouble.
Right. And then the like flying fist thing, something explodes the whole world. I'm like, we have lost the thread.
Apparently. So the exploding flying fist was apparently a thing that at the beginning, it was supposed to be a plot point, but I think it was lost somewhere. And at the start, when Achilles tries to save the crowd by blocking the fist and then falling and killing everybody, the fist was supposed to explode. I guess there's some note that there's a novelization where they talk about it. So then at the end, the fist has been fixed to explode. But I mean, that is completely, you know, not, it's lost in the movie. And you don't really need it, but yeah, it's completely lost. But also talking about the rules, how about the worst referees ever? The refs in this, in the Robot Jocks world are just like, don't do it. I'm going to do it. All right. Go ahead and do it.
You know? I also like that they're judges. I mean, that's even better.
Judges in their like future Foot Locker outfits.
Did love that they had like padded like Foot Locker outfits.
Those pads are not going to help flying robot debris or exploding fists. Like those pads aren't going to do anything. I also like that the guards, at least that we see in the market side, I was like, are they space balls? They have pretty round helmets.
You know, that's props get traded around from movie to movie. You never know.
That is true.
Yep.
I think most of the outfits from this came from BMX Bandits or something. There's a lot of...
Gleaming the Cube.
Oh, hell yeah.
Metal Storm, The Destruction of Jared Sin. You know, the classics.
So another thing that I, another kind of little bit that I like, besides the fact that I wrote all these notes, I'm not even looking at them. so when Achilles is like 10 fights and I'm done, it was a draw. He's like, forget it. I'm still out. And then he kind of gets sucked back in. Athena drugs him so she can go fight.
Right.
Some fun fight scenes, some really interesting, like pseudo martial arts poses that I like a lot.
Martial arts was, that was some Adam West Batman shit going on there. I appreciate
that.
Yeah,
well, apparently, what's their faces? Gary Graham and Emery Johnson were not martial arts experts and had to learn training. Yes, believe it or not.
I do not believe it.
I also read that he's pretty conservative and she's pretty liberal, so they actually didn't really get along as humans.
That's apparently the case, yes. Yeah. They probably argued a lot on set.
But which I don't know how, I guess there's a lot of setup time in between Robot Jocks scenes where you can talk about your personal life. You should really be focusing on the text, I think. But anyway, so when Athena like kind of
motion, they're a little busy.
Yeah. What I like about it though is when Athena, like when we first see, when we see like Achilles, when we first see him suit up and he's going, he's like really chummy with everybody, and one of the guys smacks his little butt. And then when Athena goes up and she's posing as Achilles, of course she has her helmet on so you can't see her. And everybody's like, she's acting a little weird. But when the little butt smack happens, I like that the guy's like, them's ain't Achilles' cheeks.
And yeah, that's no, that's, know.
I love that like, so much.
Yeah. That yeah, should not have been nearly as funny as it was.
And it's not even really played for laughs, but I just find, I find it hilarious. No. He's like, that's not the butt I know.
Yeah, no, set up and payoff for the butt slap. Because when it first happens, I was like, did that guy just randomly slap Gary Graham's butt?
Hey, sports, man. No, yeah. I do love it. Chekhov's butt smack. That's one of the things that Robot Jocks gave us.
Yeah.
Yes. You know, actually, I want to say, unironically, there are some parts of the movie that just get so obviously or dropped. They couldn't be filmed or they didn't make the cut. But for all that, this screenplay is astonishingly competent. It's nicely structured, slightly unusually structured, and does a lot of little efficient pieces of world building that a lesser movie would not have had. So for that alone, I give Robot Jocks a hearty endorsement.
Oh yeah, no, Haldeman, you know, hell of a writer, and it. Yes, there were a lot of it that was shoved around to make it more like a Transformers kid movie, but you could tell like Haldeman really had something there that he just like with all of his anti-war stuff wanted to get out.
Yeah,
and Gordon, you know, I mean, you know, he took a lot of the complexity away. He was a really good director, I think. For the like level of budgets that he had, he achieved so much. I think also I was going to say, I forgot to mention the first time I watched Robot Jocks, and Adam knows this, I have during like lockdown and stuff, some friends of mine, they started this weekly group, you know, Zoom movie watch called Craptastic. like Craptastic movie night. And I remember, like, you know, we do like seasons, and I was trying to find a movie, and I found Robot Jocks, which I remembered in the trailer when Achilles is like looking up at Alexander. He's like, "I'm gonna kick your ass." I was like, "That's it. That's my choice. I love this line." But then as I was watching it, and all of us too, you know, it's like, it's funny and it is low budget. But we all, it all started sinking in. We're like, wait, this is a good movie. This isn't crap. It's got a charm. It's got a really B movie, low budget charm, but they got pretty good actors, really giving it their all. Cool for the what they had effects. You know, a lot of a story that's way smarter than it needs to be. So we always voted, and this is, and like there's a winner each season, and this is the only time I've won. And so I am very proud to introduce this movie to people. But at the same time, that was one of our things. We're all watching it going, wait a minute, this isn't crappy, guys. We're watching a good movie.
How did this happen? Damn it.
Yeah, I find there's a joy to be movies like this where they clearly don't have the money they need, and you know, but they still go for it. I really appreciate it.
Yeah, agreed.
No, there is again, like, yeah, when they approach them with love, when they actually want to make a fun thing, you could feel it. And I'm not sure. Here's my question. Why is this basically forgotten, and like, why did it essentially fail?
You know, I know that the company that, I mean, I read about it, the company that put it out, I think eventually became Full Moon, but they went bankrupt as this movie was finished or something. So it kind of like was one of those like sat on the shelf for a while. I don't know how good of a release it had, but it clearly became like a VHS hit, to the point where they're actually like, they were talking about doing a sequel, and this, back to Del Toro, kind of, the sequel is going to be Alexander and Achilles versus aliens. So it's kind of going to be robots versus giant kaiju type aliens. But I don't know, did you two read that there are two movies that are kind of like, they claim to be sequels, but really have nothing to do with Robot Jocks?
Yes.
I heard about this, but I don't know any details.
One of them was like, I think, directed by like the producer, and then the other one was directed by his dad. But I think the first one's called Robot Wars, and it was released. Oh no, one of them is called Robot Wars. I don't know which one, and the other one's called Crash and Burn, and was originally released as Robot Jocks 2: Crash and Burn. So it is interesting that this movie, which made no money, and is pretty forgotten, had two unofficial sequels. I don't understand why, but
and that's what's killing me. It's like Tron was 82, you know, it was a big hit. Like, this is 89. The miniature work was really solid. When did last Starfighter come out?
I think it was before this too. Those were both earlier 80s, and this actually ended up apparently didn't come out until
84.
Like, this was supposed to come out in 89, but apparently it came out in 90.
And production started as far back as 86, I believe.
Right.
Yeah.
But yeah, it didn't really, it didn't get much of a release. That's kind of
be a bunch of it, just because, I don't know, I'm just.
It was in 333 theaters at its peak.
I mean, 1990, like, we also had Darkman. Why do we know Darkman and not this?
Oh, Darkman. Is that on your list? Because, hell yeah.
No.
I love you some Darkman. Oh, my God.
You know, Arachnophobia, Total Recall. But again, like, you know, Tremors. I'm just saying, like, I'm not putting down any of these things.
But those movies are all much bigger than Robot Jocks. Like, even
and I don't get why.
Well, I mean, but the budgets were bigger. Like, they're much bigger. Like, Robot Jocks is basically direct to video. I don't think they wanted that, but
yeah.
Kind of feel,
I mean, like, and RoboCop 2 was coming out, so RoboCop had already come out.
Yeah. RoboCop, you mean the greatest film ever made? Yes. The greatest American film of all time.
So
certainly up there on the great American satires.
Yeah.
Hey, I have a weird confession to make.
Yeah.
I have never seen Dark Man.
Oh, it's not good.
Oh yeah, you know, Adam's right. It's not good. It's great. It's transcendent. When you Liam Neeson in his first lead role, Frances McDormand, young ingenue.
What? Really? Oh, okay.
Yeah, Sam Rainey Jam. I don't know. I think it's pretty fun, but it's similar to this where it's like I'm not gonna tell anybody like.
Yeah,
it's great cinema, but do I enjoy the hell out of it?
Was Sam Raimi trying to embrace superhero films while also making a horror film and kind of hitting neither correctly, honestly?
What I heard is he wanted to get the rights to The Shadow and he couldn't. Darkman was born out of. But anyway, we're not here to talk Darkman.
So can we also just discuss how in Robot Jocks, when you have to walk forward because of the servos?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Instead of having like a little treadmill or something, because that technology wasn't there, you're walking on a metal plate with your shoes have metal on the bottom, and basically you have to moonwalk.
Yes, it's like kind of Dance Dance Revolution inspired technology.
Yeah, it's completely normal.
Yeah,
it's the way we all walk.
But no, I just looking at the movies in like 89, 90, I agree. This had a smaller budget. This looks, you know, 5 years out of date.
Yeah, I was kind of surprised that it's an 89, to be honest. Like, it feels more like it should be 83.
Yeah, right. Yeah, it really does.
And I guess that's what did it.
Yeah.
It is weird to me. Like, I never, I remember when you used to bring this up, DJ, when you used to be like, oh, like Robot Jocks. And I would always confuse it with, what is it, Real Steel?
Oh, that Hugh Jackman movie?
Yes.
Yeah.
Which, I mean, is 2011. And also terrible.
I haven't seen that one.
Oh, it's bad. But like, I just always assumed it was that, like, you meant that.
Ah.
Because I would forget a whole bunch of Real Steel and forget the name of it.
So you would forget everything about Real Steel.
Yeah.
Except the fact that it was a movie.
And it was called robot fighting. It was like basically Rock'em Sock'em Robots.
You forgot everything about Real Steel except it was Robot Jocks. In your head.
Right.
That's right. Yeah. I remember. I remember
Real Steel is like Robot Jocks, except the robots are essentially smaller and it's just a sport.
Yeah, it's not as cool. Nations.
Yeah. It's a boxing movie. Yeah, Hugh Jackman never once battled for Alaska.
Right.
There it is.
And its mineral rights. And Alaska, as we know from Robot Jocks, is a big deal. I just can't forget that conversation. It's a big deal.
So interesting. Like, that's another one of those interesting choices where it is, you know, I guess in terms of like if there's, you're lacking in fuel and everything in the future, I guess, of course, and even now we are, but I don't know. There's something funny about, this big battle for Alaska. I don't know why.
Right. Which like strategically would make sense, except that there aren't any other wars. So it doesn't.
I mean, I guess there aren't. There are no more that we talk about. I mean, it does sound like there are just two sides, but I mean, I guess if there were later sequels, they could have opened it up. You know, there could be like the market, the Confederation, what's in other words, other things, you know.
Also, I was going to say, just don't forget this actually did have it was nominated for an award.
Oh, really?
Really?
Yeah. Are you the Crappies? Yes, it won the Best Crappy.
No.
Best Craptastic. Oh, no, something else.
Yeah. It was nominated for the Portuguese Fantasporto Award, which is the International Fantasy Film Award.
Sweet.
For Best Film.
Did it win?
No.
What won? No.
It looks like Black Rainbow, but what's killing me is I'm looking at this, and there's like 4 million things listed.
Oh, wow. It was every fantasy film that came out that year was nominated?
It kind of
looks like it.
Well, I've never seen. I've seen Beyond the Black Rainbow, but that came out much later. I've never seen.
Yeah,
Black
that's
Rainbow.
A recent one. Yeah, that's a Panos Cosmatos film. Like,
this has like Bill and Ted's Excellent Adventure nominated too, and Nightmare on Elm Street: Dream Child.
Those all came out at the same time. Wow, that's crazy.
You know the funny thing about the way Robot Jocks looks dated is that it certainly, I think, hurt its reception at the time, but from the perspective of a couple decades later, or three decades later, it actually, the particulars kind of fall away, so you can better appreciate it for what it is.
Yeah, I think
you think you're right. Yeah, even like the the TVs that they communicate on, where you can, you know, the old school TV set,
a remote control,
right?
Yeah. Oh, I love it when he pulls out his remote control to get his hover car to crash through his room.
When he just parks the car and like takes out the remote control.
Yeah.
I was like, "What are you like using a shortwave radio? What is about to, oh God, that's the remote." Right.
You know what it made me think of? It made me think of like the MacGruber movie when he keeps on taking out his Blaupunkt stereo from his car and carries it everywhere. So.
He does it in the TV show too. I just finally and he always has it.
I know. I've only watched the first few episodes of the TV show, which is funny, but it doesn't quite have the magic of the movie.
Right. Nah, I mean it gets a little repetitive and shockingly gruesome sometimes. That's yes. Like kind of there are a couple of parts I'm like, Jesus, okay, enough MacGruber. Robot jocks. Oh, here's one little bit that I think both of you probably appreciated too, but I loved it when they randomly went into space and silent explosions. I thought that was a really nice kind of surprising touch.
Oh, frankly, I was too distracted by the fact they were suddenly in space. I was like, what? How'd they get into space?
Again, it looks like all their fights are just, well, after the range weapons, then we punch each other. And then suddenly it's like, also, they go into space. But why? Shut up.
Because I thought, like, because he went up, and I thought, okay, he's just gonna get in the high ground, and he's just gonna pounce on him or shoot him. But no, he's like, nope, I'm going into space.
Well, it's like the whole thing transforms, like the way the cockpit kind of folds, drop. I'm like, that's not just a I'm gonna like go up and then land on you move.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
That's a fuck you. I'm going to the moon.
Well, yep.
Also, if he could go to space, why didn't he like just tilt up and catch that fist and fly it into space instead of crushing all those people?
I mean. You see how long it takes to actually do that.
Yeah, you're right. It takes a minute. I love stuff like that when they just they don't have the power until they need it.
Yeah,
right.
Sure.
I also just absolutely love how slow these things have to move because of just the effects and all that.
Yeah.
But like, so they're sitting there like reacting in almost slow motion to this like arm coming down.
I mean, that's almost, I mean, I think Pacific Rim kind of has that too, just to show the size. I mean, not as extreme, but yeah, there's something about, I mean, I'm a pretty big guy and I'm pretty slow too.
Yeah. No, I agree that, yep, that's absolutely correct. It just makes me laugh. I really am putting this like mentally in that category of things like Last Starfighter, Solar Babies.
Oh, yes. Yeah, yeah, I think so. I think these are really, it's a really charming movie like those that, you know, it takes itself seriously in ways that it doesn't have to.
Yeah.
It has ideas that aren't necessary, but just add to the texture so much. Also, I really do appreciate stuff like this. Like, I'll take a B movie like this over some knowingly, like, we're making a bad movie. kind of movie, you know?
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, there's just an honesty almost, or a charm to it.
Yeah, and again, it's so much deeper than it needs to be because of the work Alden put in.
Mm-hmm.
That you can really decide to just pull it apart slowly.
Yeah.
Or just watch it for the silly. Like, you have a choice.
Well, also, just in case you two didn't know, apparently there is a novelization that was released a year before before the movie came out. Huh. And it does go into some things that aren't in the movie, like all novelizations do. And yeah, you better bet I'm going to be looking for that novelization.
Next time I go to these bookstores.
Not written by Halderman, that's unfortunately. What kills me. Yeah, unfortunately, Halderman was out. He's like, nope, probably no thanks. I did enough with this cartoon. I'm out.
Yeah, Robert Thurston wrote it. I'm just like,
I don't know who that is. I don't recognize that name. But
Robert Thurston basically wrote a whole lot of novelizations at the time. Like, I think he wrote just like random movie novelizations for a while.
Oh, there.
So
guys.
It's like him and Alan Dean Foster battling it out in the Mojave Desert.
Except one of them was wildly successful and really good at it.
Yes.
I can't remember who it is, but I have the Superman 3 novelization. I can't remember the author's name, but what I love is it says from the author of the E.T. novelization. Like, yep. There was like this whole like industry. Oh,
William Codswinkle.
Oh, yes. Okay. Yes. Yes. I know that. I love it. And that movie also at one point has a chapter that begins from the point of view of the donkey that Richard Pryor's character is riding down into the Grand Canyon.
Wow.
So, I mean, this this whole industry, people making yeah. money. And I'd love that they, sometimes came out before the movies. It's so interesting.
Oh, yeah. No, that was a thing. Like, I have a collection of, a small collection of novelizations that I've just got over the years. But yeah. Have you ever looked up the actual cover for the novelization of Robot Jocks? Because it's a little bit fascinating.
No, I'm going to have to look it up, though.
First of all, the tagline on top of it is, in the future, war becomes a game that only professionals can play.
Okay.
That's not a great tagline, but okay.
But then says, the novel by Robert Thurston, based on a screenplay by Joe Haldeman and Dennis Paoli.
Who's what? That's the first time we've heard this name.
That's what I'm saying. Yeah. Like, also, it was written by a screenplay based off of some guy who never got credit.
That's amazing. Also, I got to say, that cover is better than any of the movie posters I've seen for Robot Jocks. There's something really cool about like having the little people at the foot of the big robot.
Yeah.
Ah, it's $50. Forget it. I'm not ordering it, guys.
I see what happened here. Was he's listed as like the writer on Reanimator and all this, so he had a non-credited.
Must have done a
He pass. Was probably who was doing the rewrites for.
There you go. But yeah,
I just think it's funny that he got the credit in the novel.
Well, I remember I used to buy those all the time as a kid. I had the Bill and Ted's Bogus Journey, which has a bunch of really fun stuff that wasn't in the movie. Mm-hmm. Star Trek 3 has a really weird, I think, McCoy and Klingon sex scene in the novelization. Where they like describe the Klingon ladies like her back and stuff, and I was like, "What? Not Yikes. In the movie?"
Wow, yeah. Imagine having like a sexual awakening at the hands of like a Star Trek novelization.
I don't I don't have to imagine it, Aiden.
we all see it like novelizations were normal. Mm-hmm. Like, I mean, they don't happen much anymore.
Yeah,
but I was talking with somebody about that online the other day, like. You know, if you're of that certain slice before home video became normal, because, like, obviously, right, before VCRs, you went to saw a movie again or you waited for it to come up on TV.
Yeah.
And then there are VCRs, but you couldn't buy them. You could only rent them or hopefully tape something yourself off of TV, you know, maybe skipping past the commercials badly if you could.
Mm-hmm.
And slowly, you know, you started to buy home video and there's things like HBO and cable and we have what we have now. But there was that time where novelizations, like in comics or, you know, prose, were a big deal.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I mean, as a kid, I was into them. And even when VCRs were there, I'd still just, like the Terminator 2 novelization I got.
Yep.
I had the Batman one. Like, I loved them. And I think it's really interesting, too, how we're, you know, so many people are, you know, no spoilers, upset with spoilers. And then we came from, you know, back then, they used to put out a book with the whole story.
Yeah.
Before the movie came out, like spoilers were at our fingertips.
Oh God, yes, and yeah, I think I have the collection of all the Indiana Jones ones.
Oh, fun!
Which are a real lesson in how much Indiana Jones sucks.
As a character.
As a character.
Okay.
If you remove Harrison Ford's charm, it reveals Indy for the villain that he is.
Oh, nice.
There's an interesting thing too. If you like see or I don't know if they've recorded or if there's just audio with Tom Selleck, and it might have been Sean Young auditioning for Indy and Marion.
Yeah,
and even though Tom Selleck has his own charisma, the line sounds so smarmy coming from his voice that just don't quite sound as bad coming from Harrison Ford for some reason. Yeah,
yeah, yeah. I can picture that.
It's really There's something. Yeah, his charm really. Makes up for a lot. Like, I still think Raiders is a near perfect movie. I also think that Indy doesn't even need to be in the movie for the actual plot to happen. It all would have happened almost exactly the same, actually with fewer deaths.
I remember reading reading that novelization, and two things stood out to me. One, that the Indy Marion relationship really was inappropriate in a way that I never got from the movie when I watched it. But when I read the book, I was like, oh crap.
I mean, she even says in the movie, like, I was 14.
Oh, she says,
I was a child.
Right. Yeah. No, no, I know all that, but it didn't quite hit. It didn't hit. But when I read the novelization, I was around the same age. I was like, oh, this is creepy as hell.
I didn't even get that as a kid. But watching the movie later as an adult, I'm like, wait a second. What is the age gap here? Oh, my God.
Yeah. What? She was this dude.
Like, yeah. Also, the Belloc Marion seduction scene in the novel was super hot to me as a kid when I read it. Speaking of sexual awakenings at the hands of novel adaptations.
Yeah. Oh my gosh. Now we got to find the novelization of Robot Jocks and do a follow up to this episode.
I was looking, it's not cheap.
I know. Well, I mean, I saw on Amazon it's 50, but I'm just hoping. I'll go to some random used bookstore and just find a pile of them under some dust, under like a cat sitting on a pile of dusty books.
See, what you got to do is go look for who has the rights so that we can reprint it.
Ooh. You know, if we got a copy of it, it would probably just be like wall-to-wall Achilles and Athena banging. That's probably, that's all it would be. It'd be wow, man, I would have liked this when I was 13, but now it's a little bit tiresome.
Okay, now I love it. No, I think also I think it's 230 pages for an 85-minute movie. So I got to imagine that a lot of the stuff that got cut, you know, in the script
is probably in
could be in that movie. Yeah. So we shall see. I'll find it someday. This I swear.
I'm gonna start trolling the local used bookstores now because I'm really curious.
Yeah, I'm like $5 curious. I'm not $50 curious.
That's right. That's a, you put it also exactly right.
Can we start a trend where we try to convince people that Mr. Robot the show is a sequel to Robot Jocks? Like it actually is a prequel. Mr. Robot was a prequel. You can call me Robot Jock.
Right. Mr.
Robot's son got into sports. So how do we feel on the X instead of CK and Jocks? Cool? Not cool? Very cool.
Moderately cool for me.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like one of those, I think, you couldn't trademark it otherwise, so I get it.
I think the X kind of put me off when I read it or when I saw the movie poster at first. But then I thought if it were CKS, I would never touch this film. I would be like, nope. So the X kind of helped. It's a rare example in this day and age of an X doing something positive.
Nice. Even though the tagline on the poster is two men, two machines, too wild.
Yeah, that's the better tagline. But was that an X-Men dig, Aiden?
No.
Definitely not.
Yeah.
I would never besmirch the X-Men. Although X-Men Apocalypse and the one after that were terrible movies.
There's a bunch of terrible X-Men movies. Anyway, what about the Ox? 5 out of 5 stars. No, I don't know about that, but it's a really fun movie. I'm glad I got to talk to it with you two. And also, it made me rewatch it again because I really don't rewatch movies because I watch so many. And I'm like, I don't have limited time on this earth. You know, I still sometimes buy them and I'm like, why? Don't rewatch. So it's kind of fun to rewatch this one.
Yeah, I like rewatching stuff. I mean, obviously, right? We're here.
Yeah.
But yeah, this is one of those that if there was an easily grabbable Blu-ray, I would probably end up just like sticking it in and be like, okay, let's go.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Oh, another thing. I don't know if you two, is it Jeffrey Combs? Or is it Combs? Combs?
Combs.
I like that Jeffrey Combs is like the De Niro,
the betting guy, right?
Scorsese. Yeah, he's the betting guy, but he is the reanimator. He's in Castle Freak. Like, he's like his. And also, he's in another movie that I highly recommend if you haven't seen it, a Full Moon picture called Dr. Mordred, where he plays the titular Dr. Mordred, which was going to be a Doctor Strange movie. They were ready to go. Then they didn't get the rights. And they said, we're changing his name to Mordred. We're going to add some boobies. Done. And it is great. And he really is just straight up Doctor Strange. Like, he has a blue shirt with like billowy arms and stuff, like, you know.
Oh man.
It's a really fun, like just really low budget, fun movie with Jeffrey Combs as Dr. Mordred.
I always liked that, and he was the Question in Justice League Unlimited.
Oh, okay, yeah, I mean, he's got a great voice. He's a really good, like, dramatic, over dramatic actor. He's in a lot of, he plays so many different aliens in various Star Trek shows.
Oh, yes.
He's really good. So it's fun to see him in that little cameo. Since they didn't cast him as Achilles. Also, apparently, Jean-Claude Van Damme was one of the first choices for Achilles.
I'm not surprised.
The reason he didn't do it is because a robot, they couldn't design it to do the splits. So he's like, oh no, I am out. No Jean-Claude for you.
What?
That's my, I'm really good at impressions.
Holy crap, you got Jean-Claude Van Damme in here just for that bit. That was amazing.
Hello, Aiden and Adam. It's Jean-Claude cameo for you.
Oh,
he's like,
dear.
He's like, this robot, the buns aren't hot enough. It cannot be Jean-Claude.
Wait a minute. That sounds French, not Belgian. Ah, something's not right here. Come on.
Oh, mon dieu.
Zut alors.
Zut alors. Adam's like,
Lordy.
Well, Adam's like trying to hang up now.
I just like, oh god.
Hitting the button repeatedly, going, oh my god, at the button, it doesn't work.
Part of me was wondering, like, can I trick them into doing like a 2-hour episode of Destroy All Culture just by continuing babbling?
I mean, probably.
Yes. But yeah. I also just actually I do have a couple more things to say.
Please.
Just little points to highlight from Robot Jocks that I particularly enjoyed. I have a real soft spot for the post Hangover scene. When what's his face Achilles wakes up naked in bed and Athena is just sitting there smiling at him.
Oh yeah.
I loved that scene. I can't get enough of that. It was such. Like, Gary Graham was overacting the Hangover so hilariously. It's like, oh, Hangover. And just proceeding to basically Buster Keaton his way around his apartment.
I've never been that hungover.
Right? Oh, my God.
My God, how much did he drink?
Yeah, nobody's ever been that hungover in their entire lives. But the whole thing is shot, like, every time he moves, Athena is like right beside him. And it's just this crazy little cartoon bit where no matter what he does, she's just in frame, just kind of looking at him like, what happens now? What's happening now? And I got such a kick out of that whole thing. And I wish the whole thing had just been one continuous shot. There are cuts, but yeah, I mean, we do what we can, I guess.
And if it were Jean-Claude, we would have seen more of his buns.
We would have indeed. He would have done the splits on his like as he fell down.
Yeah, like, oh no, what have I done?
Oh my god.
Oh, this does not hurt me.
Oh yeah, that's exactly it. That's how he sounds.
I fell out of my balls.
I kind of wish that we had more because like we know that what's his name? Alexander's whole team has to be there, right?
Well, they do show up in the bar.
Actually, well, I kind of like that they all kind of hang out. Like,
right, not, that's what I'm saying. Yeah. Like, really I wish we got more of them.
Yeah.
I like how they're like, we're hanging out, but when we get to our robots, I'm going to kill you. Like, even though I don't have to. Yeah, it's
yeah, exactly. Yeah, it's weird the attitude towards life and limb in these fights. It's like the spectators, like, if they die, well, they signed a waiver. Yeah. And if the fighters die, well, they knew what they were getting into. Yep, they signed a waiver. They're going to like Buffalo Wild Wings or something and eating like the hot stuff.
What?
Okay, I don't know how that.
In the States, okay. People don't die at Buffalo Wild Wings that often.
Yeah, how's it going in your neck of the woods?
I don't know. I've never been to Buffalo Wild Wings. I did go to a restaurant where they had hot wings and you had to sign a waiver, but I couldn't remember the name of it. It was this weird little place in Newfoundland. I don't know. You get your picture on the wall if you actually ate this plate of hot wings.
I had a friend who we got hot wings at this place called Quaker Steak and Lube years ago. And I'm not a bold man. I don't want super heat. I don't want pain. But my friend lube. Nate, and I want lube. Well, sometimes I need it. My friend Nate, he got a like the super hot or whatever, but it was like atomic or something. And he ate it, you know, he's like, his eyes start watering, and then the fool wiped his eyes.
and then immediately runs to the bathroom,
like,
oh no.
Yeah, so that's why you got to sign those waivers, because he might go blind.
Jeez. Yeah.
Anyway, sorry, what else about Robot Jock?
I don't know. I just want to know who's been to Buffalo Wild Wings, because I've always wanted to go, but there aren't.
I have a Buffalo Wild Wings story, but I can't tell it on air.
Oh, I thought you said you have one, like you're a franchise owner.
No.
Buffalo Wild Wings, it's I run it out of my garage. okay, well, after the podcast, I want to hear the Buffalo Wild Wings.
Yeah, I'll do.
Oh, cool.
But
no, that's it.
I think
that's it. I also love the last scene. I genuinely really enjoyed that moment when they're just almost dead but continuing to beat on each other.
Yeah, they really did sell that well.
Yeah, that was really good. Yeah. That whole thing. Well, I thought that was really great. And that conversation at the end.
That line you quoted, we are already dead. We are robot jocks. Pretty great. Yeah.
It hit, like, even though he said robot jocks, it still hit. So there you go.
Well, thank you, DJ, for coming on with us.
Hey, sorry. I mean, thank you.
About robot jocks.
Sorry to derail your podcast, but I had fun. Thank you.
This is probably more coherent than usual.
Thanks for bringing Jean-Claude Van Damme just for a cameo. Yeah. That was
yes. You're welcome. See you guys later.
And, oh my God, Jean-Claude Van Damme.
Oh, thumbs up, thumbs up. I gotta go.
We'll be back next week to talk about, of all things, Barry Levinson's toys.
Oh, okay.
Toys, yes.
That's
a movie that Adam loves and that I cannot stand, but I'm going to watch it again to see if my opinion has changed.
My opinion might change. I can just come. We completely reverse.
It's a movie that completely baffled me when I saw it, but I think my younger brother really likes it.
Nice.
Yeah.
Oh.
Well, until then, we'll play some music.
Hey, music.
Woo! Yay! Crash and burn.
Damn.
Crash and bomb.